There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food, what he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. You got field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masses are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble.
I want to welcome everyone to another installment of Bourbon and Browntown. My name is David of Browntown.
Colin of Browntown here.
And we are accompanied with Harambe yet again. Something that we like to do throughout the course of our events is we're drinking bourbon. And today we are drinking Bullet, which you could probably pick up at Jewel or what have you. But today we'll be talking to you guys about a few things. But let's understand that this past weekend was Malcolm X's birthday.
Happy birthday, Malcolm.
Happy birthday,
to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. All right.
So in today's installment, we're going to be a little bit brief, but we will be kind of talking about Malcolm, his legacy, and what he would really say today, you know, to not only the youth, not only to the African-Americans in our country, but to everyone as a whole. Because I feel that since his departure, things have very much kind of changed up. Now, things aren't the way they were like in the 50s, 60s, you know. We came in today with one of Malcolm's speeches talking about the field Negro versus the house Negro.
Ben Carson.
But I, on a personal, have been reading the autobiography of Malcolm X for the first time. And over the last few weeks that I've been reading it, I have been surprised with what it is that I've been reading. And I guess one of the most surprising things to me was one of the quotes where Malcolm speaks and he says, to accomplish by any means necessary. And growing up, I was aware of who Malcolm X was. I was aware of his influence, his trips around the world, and then that quote in particular, by any means necessary, to accomplish things, to do something, to achieve something by any means necessary. And to me, I'd always read that, I'd always heard that as something that was like, you know, do it like no matter what. Like, to me, it felt aggressive. And yet, as I've slowly but surely been going through the autobiography, I've been really feeling otherwise. I don't think when he spoke and when he said, you know, by any means necessary, he meant, you know, that meant to take a life or that meant to, you know, go into a place and burn it to the ground. I really slowly but surely have been going through his work, going through his autobiography, and realizing that that's not the type of person who he was, even though he's always mentioned or he's always portrayed in, you know, popular media as, you know, the spear front, if you will.
Right. Yeah, very much so. I think if you look at like everything he says up until that by any means necessary, he's just saying that people should have human rights. Like everyone should be equal and have rights to good resources and be respected as, you know, a man, a woman, a child, a human being. Just everyone should have rights. Everyone should have basic human rights, and those basic human rights should be fought for by any means necessary. I think there's nothing wrong with that. But yeah, you're right. Those words have been commodified and used to be like, oh, he means like by any means, like, you know, grab a gun, do this, that, and the other. And even on that note, it's like, yeah, if you need to defend yourself and your family against like violent racist people firebombing your home and you have a gun to kind of protect yourself, like that's self-defense. It's not violence. You know, and he would say, I'm paraphrasing from Malcolm himself. And so, yeah, I think that those words have been very much, you know, esteemed as like super like violent or militant and all this other thing. And it's like, you know, I discuss, you know, Malcolm or Martin or, you know, the movements of today, I'm talking about Black liberation or what have you, is it's very easy and it makes sense in a way to say radical politics or radical this, radical that. Black Lives Matter isn't radical. The there's more tenets to the movement as a whole, not just organization, but the movement as a whole. But it's like saying Black Lives Matter, That's not a crazy radical thought. That's just saying they matter. It's not saying they're better than white lives. It's not saying they're better than Latino lives or whatever. It's just they matter. And mm-hmm. we feel like we need to say that because they're not treated like they matter by the state. Not just by police, but by the water system, by public housing, by public health. You know, all these institutional things. So and that's one way I kind of tie really the movement of 50s, 60s, 70s, Malcolm and Martin, really, to today. It's like, you know, things are fighting for. They're not like, we're not asking for a lot. We're trying to get a seat at the table. But to get to the table has, you know, it's so many more things in between that, which is, you know, ridiculous.
No, but returning back to his autobiography, I haven't completely finished it. You know, I am reading it for the first time, though, so I'm taking my time with it.
As you need to.
But with that quote, it's a statement intended to encourage a paralyzed constituent of American culture to consider the range of options to which they were entitled to, you know, being by the means. You know, that's a direct quote from the foreword. You know, and going through a little bit more in depth, because, you know, we have this constant portrayal of dead people, you know, in media. You know, at Martin Luther King has an episode in Boondocks for all of that.
So good.
Which is, if for anyone who doesn't know what Boondocks is, I'm sure we've mentioned something of Boondocks at this point. And if we have not, then we're doing it now.
He just said what I think he said.
Is this it? This is what I got all those ass whoopings for? Black entertainment television is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Usher, Michael Jackson is not a genre of music. And now I'd like to talk about soul playing.
It's kind of what he has to say during, when was it, 2010?
It was like 04, 05.
04, 05, holy fuck.
Yeah, it was not 2010.
I'm way back. But kind of seeing then, so this constant sort of popular media and its interpretation of past events, of people themselves, reading his autobiography has been exposing a lot for myself in particular. You know, like from a very early age, kind of realized and kind of sort of saw how the system in place, you know, was against him, and that was something that had been on his mind. His father was killed by, you know, the Black Legion, which was a group of white people who hated black people. That's basically what it was, and that left him and his mom and, you know, all his brothers and sisters to kind of just deal with themselves. And even in that early age, you know, you have his father who, what little time he had with him, ended up, you know, talking to him and telling him, you know, don't do this, here's that. And one of the quotes from the book, you know, it's like, credit is the first step into debt and, you know, and back into slavery. So here he is at an early age, you know, realizing these things and kind of like, maybe he didn't have the verbiage to, you know, talk about it the way he did when he was writing it. But at an early age, you know, you still see shit. You still understand things. And, you know, I remember growing up West Side Chicago, you know, I didn't really ever understand what my parents, like, immigration status was even all about. But eventually I ended up realizing that, like, I was like, hey, my parents aren't even from here. Like, their English isn't 110%. You know, I started realizing all these things. You grow up, and sure, now I can talk about them and understand that structures put them in place to do X, Y, and Z, yada, yada, yada. But from a young age, you still have that, you know, and how that builds you, how that, you know, tones you to be who it is that you are. You know, and he saw this with the people coming into his house, you know, them being, you know, the welfare people, as he called it. You know, and the blaming of society's failures, hypocrisies, greed, and lack of mercy and compassion. You know, that was really much in him since the beginning. And then you see that very much implemented throughout. You know, I know that you are a little bit more, have studied Malcolm. I'm sure, I know you've read this book already.
Sure.
It's his, not mine.
It's been a while.
That's why
it's
I'm
been
reading. A while. But no. And it's very much, it's enlightening to see.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. And like, and with your kind of summary of kind of him growing up and kind of like knowing these things and having them being examples as he became an activist and kind of talking about them, it reminds me of like conversations I've had with activists and just like friends of mine now as like young adults being like, yeah, like back in the day, my father did this, my father had this privilege or this happened in my life. And like at the time I was a child, I didn't know what it meant, but I knew something was wrong or I felt something was wrong. and or it made me feel a certain way, and now I understand why that was. And I think, you know, Malcolm, like you know, most activists or organizers kind of have that narrative and have that personal experience and how they can attribute that to you know, broader structures and contribute, you know, these micro things that happen in their lives to bigger things. And then they know how to combat that because it made them feel a certain way, and it has real implications on society as a whole.
And I think, so continuing kind of a little bit more with the book, not that we're going to break it down for y'all.
Y'all should read it.
I very much recommend. No, very much sure. Cause
I'll let you borrow it, even if you just hit me up. I'll let you borrow it.
No, and it's something that I've been meaning to read, you know, as like, as a brown person, as a Mexican male, you know, whether that be in music, whether that be in poetry, and the range in between, something that I've always gravitated to is human beings and the level of honesty which they can portray themselves to a larger audience. And I think, you know, when writing an autobiography of yourself, you're leaving some things out and you're putting some things in. I think that's sure. That's just the way it works. And like reading through what I already have, you know, one of the chapters is called Mascot, and it's sort of his realization of how, you know, he's 13 years old, and yet he's one of the only black people in his classes because he's going to school somewhere not close by, you know. And in that, there's one quote that really like stuck out to me, where he hates history. You know, he's not a fan of his history teacher, first of all, to begin with, because apparently he had like asshole. A fucking paragraph of you know, African Americans and their time in slavery, yada yada yada. But his thing was he loves mathematics, and the reason for that because it leaves no room for argument. Being exposed to that in these first pages of his novel, I mean, there is a foreword by his daughter where he talks about where he becomes an image for one of the stamps, for the United Postal stamps, which is very touching, very, you know, moving in and of itself. But it really allows for the rest of it to kind of like, you know, his daughter clearly read this, you know what I'm saying? And so there's, you know, there's with an awareness, she created this forward. And I think that's really what it does. And it complements, you know, very well. You know, continuing with the novel itself, you know, he talks about women in his life. He talks about drug abuse, you know, which, you know, as a black and brown person, you know, he kind of just fell into simply because of the ecosystem where he was placed. He ends up then moving, you know, moving to Boston and, you know, continuing his life there and leading on to what we all know him as. You know, he ended up getting arrested and, you know, things of the sort.
And I think kind of tying it back to how the mainstream sees him, how the mainstream sees MLK a little bit as well, is like with the stamp in the foreword, what his daughter talks about, is like, that was a big deal. Not just because he was a black leader, not just because he was a famous person who was black, brown, or white, or whatever, but because he's not talked about the same way as Martin Luther King, right? Martin Luther King... was very radical in his analysis on capitalism, on racism, on American militarism. You don't hear that as much as you kind of dig into it and dig into his beliefs and things he said, because his legacy has been very much commodified by the white mainstream for lots of capitalist reasons and just, you know, nonviolent reasons, right? That's a different podcast. The point being is, like, you know, you might see an MLK stamp often, and you have an MLK day, and we're off school, MLK day, off work. There's not a Malcolm X day, right? There's a Martin Luther King day, which is great. But Martin Luther King, we look at his legacy, even the part that's true and not, you know, oversaturated or commodified. You know, he worked with LBJ. He worked with, you know, electoral politics to get policies passed. And I think we needed that in the movement. But additionally, we needed Malcolm as well to kind of reject the system and reject some of the institutions and really have on a purely cultural basis and be very and more outspoken and more aggressive about certain things, which I think Martin Arsenal agreed with, but, you know, he had his own different dissection of things. So I feel like often it's always like this pitted, like, Malcolm versus Martin, and it's always this very binary bullshit, which even happens within circles of people we think are, you know, our fam, right?
AKA woke.
Or woke and whatever. It's like, no, I choose this. Like, no, like, stop choosing Malcolm or Martin. Like, we need both of them. We need both of these. Beyond just these, you know, these cis straight men, we need these these nuanced movements of working with electoral politics, working with policy, and working also with like these cultural and awakening moments in the minds of people, in the minds of consciousness, right? So like all the things Malcolm and Martin were combating and trying to change for love and peace and equality, they're still the same fights we're fighting today. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously they and the movements have made strides, and all the women who are involved in those movements as well have made strides. Don't get me wrong, but all those things we're still fighting today. But the way we look at Malcolm and the way we've been conditioned to look at Malcolm as he's, you know, a violent, this, that, and the other, and he's also Muslim, which obviously has a play into the xenophobia and the
negative
way
connotation. Like, yeah, definitely.
We don't like Muslims in this country, right?
Some people don't like Muslims in this country,
of course. But that has some part to do with it too. But yeah, so the way we look, the way the system looks at Malcolm is different than Martin. But when we look at, we actually know their politics, know what they said and thought and felt. They're both quote unquote radical in a sense that they're gonna vehemently go against capitalism, go against racism, and their institutionalized ways of which they operate in our society.
No, and kind of to like to very quickly to talk back to the point that you were talking about with Malcolm being Muslim, his commentary on Christianity is like it's been an excuse for slavery, and that was one of the bridges that allowed him to make the trip. Not only that, but like leaving the United States and like traveling around the world and realizing that the people, the black people, had, it's not just in the United States. It's a very particular, you know, example that there's so much more that encompasses that. And so I think his journey around the world, which he talks about in his book, very much pertains to what you were talking about. And so then, yeah, we have here this, you know, reclaiming MLK, you know, hashtag reclaiming MLK.
Things I kind of just talked about Martin Luther King aren't, you know, not just my thoughts. Like, folks know this, especially folks who are in the grassroots organizing, the hard activists out in the streets in that sphere, like, and outside that sphere as well. Like we know this, right? We know we know Martin's analysis and his work against militarism, against capitalism, against, of course, racism, but really for love, for equality, for poor people, and for disenfranchised folks to get a leg up. And not to get a leg up, but to make a system in which you don't need assistance to folks who are poor and disenfranchised, because people aren't poor and disenfranchised, right? He definitely had a revolutionary analysis on the American system at the time. So did Malcolm. Which isn't as hard of an argument to make, but Martin did too. Like, right, like he was very much not trying to treat the symptoms of the system that we had, but also just make a system that wouldn't beget the inequalities so starkly and so in your face as we dealt with then and we deal with now. And so there's a lot of, we're in Chicago now, and there's a lot of grassroots groups through every, you know, January, they'll have like a Reclaim MLK event or march or something. And you know, hashtag reclaiming MLK, you can see what's been going on around the country, right? But it's like the reclaim is important because it's reclaiming the legacy of MLK, the quote unquote radical legacy of MLK that is in opposition to the commodified mainstream
version,
whitened bullshit version that people use to get their agendas across or to tell black folks to stop getting in the streets and stop in traffic, because that's not what MLK did when he did do that. And he was part of groups that did that, right? I'm thinking of Black Lives Matter doing that and, you know, Fox News criticizing them, right? So it's like, sometimes it's just blatant lies about MLK wouldn't do this. So it's like, oh, like black folks today, or, you know, really any marginalized people shouldn't do this today because the patron saint of activism in MLK in this safe version, he wouldn't do it, right? Yeah. It's like, and you know, probably most of the examples, like, no, he did do that. And he wouldn't claim after that. But the reason folks are able to make those arguments is because the way we've been conditioned to digest MLK is this passive, you know, slow talking
Baptist minister
who, you know, didn't want any trouble. No, motherfucker wanted trouble.
I mean, hey.
He wanted institutionalized racism and capitalism to end. Like, right. Yeah, that's asking for some trouble, right?
He's a human being. That's what we're trying to get at. But what I like to be always interested in about is like, how would they react to today? You know, like, so we at Soapbox very much use social media as this way to engage, and not only engage, but to sort of educate, and in this education sort of build on this social change, you know, that starts with ourselves, with all of us. But like, Can you imagine if Malcolm and Martin had a Twitter right now?
Oh my God. Oh, it'd be great. Oh, it'd be great all the time.
I'm just curious, like, how do you think they would have, like, realistically, like, we're looking at, you know, people who would be, well, he's 19.
What's the song he has in Selma?
Who?
Common.
Common.
One day. Tim and John Legend. So the song Common made for Selma, the movie, the singer song him and John Legend, he has a, I'm paraphrasing, he has a quote where he's basically saying the movement, you know, today needs the knowledge of the elders or the spirit of the young, right? So I feel like what, like, practically Malcolm and Martin would do now would be different depending on how old they are, right? But I think they would very much be proud of and be all about what's happening now, because a lot of the things we're doing now, they did then, right? And I think it's taking, here's the thing, it's taking the militancy and the cultural pride and empowerment of Black Lives Matter, of BLP 100, of like these cultural movements that are very unapologetically Black, but also syncing that with SNCC, with groups back then, they were very much working with policy, working with politicians to get legislation passed. And so I think we're doing that today, even if it's not all in one group, is it across the broader movement? And they were doing that then too, kind of like Black Power movement, kind of arguably, obviously, kind of overlapped with Civil Rights movement, if you want to create that binary. But I think we're kind of doing that now. But I think they would very much like what's happening now, and they would probably give us some more tools to make things happen faster and better.
Well, to put things in context, Martin Luther King was born on January 15th, 1929. Malcolm X was born May 19th, which is around the time we're shooting this podcast, 1925, which would put Martin Luther King at 88 and Malcolm turning 91.
They still be around kicking it.
Of course they will. I don't see why not. No, actually, it'd be more than 91. He'd be turning 92. Regardless of what age they would be, I really feel that if they weren't taken, things would have changed very differently. We can't say that Malcolm and Martin weren't instrumental in leading this thing, and it would have been wonderful if, who's to say that they'd still be with us today. However, I do understand that their movements, their moments, and even their use in the media, you know, they have led to us, people like you and myself, to be able to do these sort of things and be able to be Black and brown and
proud,
and be able, exactly, like being able to, and not only be proud, but be able to understand that education in and of itself is necessary.
Yeah.
Why? Because then we as human beings, much like Colin does in every podcast breaks things down,
break it down in a way
that is not only necessary, but is also accessible. And in being able to communicate something as difficult and as particular as racism.
Yeah, and controversial, you know, and, you know,
all these things. It's being able to have the words, being able to have that mannerism in speaking about these things, where it's being able to find this balance. I mean, I'm glad that you think that they would be happy, because then that makes me happy. Because that means that what we're doing the right thing, you know, and we're seeing that.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I'm curious about is that what they're, so hashtag Shy DNA, Drill and Activism Project in Chicago. I've personally been interviewing activists and drill rappers about activist resurgence and drill rap in the city. One thing I've gathered from a lot of the activists I've been talking to, male and female, is the intersectionality that's happening now. The intersectionality, as far as, you know, Black folks, white folks, cis folks, trans folks, gay, lesbian, whatever, all these like different folks who are part of, you know, similar movements and kind of co-sponsoring each other's movements, has been a reason for this resurgence in activism and the saliency of activism, but also the decentralization of the movement. And I think that kind of started with Occupy, and there's pros and cons to Occupy, but I think that was part of the signal thing, is like trying to overthrow an oppressive system, not just like looking at policy
issues. Yeah.
Yeah. But we're seeing that now too, Black Lives Matter. I mean, obviously we're seeing certain policies, but it's also a bigger macro level analysis on like abolition of cops, of prisons, of like, or just looking at white supremacy and capitalism and the patriarchy from the top down. So 20 years from now, or 50 years from now, I guess is more accurate, if there's folks doing a podcast looking at Black Lives Matter, the broader Black Lives Matter movement now, or the movement to, you know, economic equality in the 2010s, you know, who was a champion of economic equality in the 2010s? There's not a Rosa Parks, there's not a Malcolm X, there's not a Martin Luther King, there's not like a single person. It's decentralized, right? It's a grassroots, it's a movement of mass people doing this, mass organizations doing this. So I'm curious what Malcolm and Martin's outlook would be on the decentralization and the intersectionality of movements of today versus then, and why they didn't have that then. And if they felt implicated with, you know, being cis males, and cis males with some baggage of, mm-hmm. of, you know, infidelity potentially, how they would feel about the movement today. And what their conversation would be, and if they felt implicated then at all, mm-hmm. being prominent figures of this movement versus now, or you can name a couple, you know, activists and folks and stuff in different cities. Like, absolutely, sure, there's always gonna be someone you can kind of look at too, but for the most part, there's not Malcolm today. I think that's good. Mm-hmm. I think there's pros to that, and maybe there's cons to that too. But I'm curious what their thoughts would be on that, because I don't know what that answer is. Mm-hmm.
But regardless of that, as you've been saying, Colin, it is our job to mobilize, you know, and right. in this mobilization of ourselves, we can take it or their work that much further, you know. As Malcolm said, if you're not ready to die for it, put the word freedom out of your vocabulary.
Hey.
So at the end of the day, as you already know, stay black, stay brown, stay queer.
Stay tuned, stay turnt.
So we'd be out here. All right, everyone have a wonderful night. Happy birthday, Malcolm X.
Happy birthday to you, sir.
SoBlacksPO.com.
We declare our right on this earth to be a man, to be a human being, to be respected as a human being, to be given the rights of a human being in this society, on this earth, in this day, which we intend to bring into existence by any means.